even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Hollywood Phonies, the podcast where the fake movies and real movies become real movies from fake movie makers. I'm Ben Vanel.
I'm Tommy Dasilo.
And I'm Adam Knox. Sex and the City 2 sees Carrie, Miranda, Samantha and Charlotte leaving their home of New York City and jetting over to Abu Dhabi on an all-expenses-paid vacation after Samantha gets a PR job for a sheik who she meets at the premiere of her ex-boyfriend's film, Heart of the Desert.
How's, L.A.?
I'm in Abu Dhabi.
You're back in the Middle East?
Yeah, we're shooting the poster for the movie I made here. And I just found out that we're premiering in New York.
Heart of the Desert looks to be another career milestone for Smith. A grisly, emotional war movie with a budget so big that they've flown Smith back to the desert just to take the photo for the poster.
But who is this young child that he's holding in the poster? How much involvement did the United Arab Emirates have in the scriptwriting process? And which is the best cab sav to sip on in a war zone? We'll answer all of these questions and more on today's
Hollywood Phonies!
I've got a lot on for pilot season. It's actually going great.
And joining us today, we have a very special guest, a man who is very intimately familiar with the source material of Heart of the Desert. Please welcome Guy Montgomery.
Hello. Yes. Hello. Thanks for the welcome, boys. It's a delight to be here, and it's a very exciting prospect. I love the podcast. I love the premise, and the movie that we're exploring today is obviously something I've brushed up against so many times in my life, and never, I mean, probably just through sheer boredom and repetition, have probably psychoanalyzed briefly in passing, but never have I thought to extrapolate on. Because it's not, you know, this is a film that is not without grounding and context inside of Sex and the City 2.
Yes, right. So for anyone,
I'm excited to hear about.
Yeah, for anyone who doesn't know, you host a podcast called The Worst Idea of All Time.
Yes.
Where for a year, we watched Sex and the City 2 every week for a year for that podcast.
Yeah. And that was without having seen, I mean, not just Sex and the City 1, but nor the Sex and the City series. And so it was quite a, not a steep entry point, but like the whole franchise has sort of run out of puff. And the Sex and the City 2 movie is like, obviously it holds a very special, torturous place in my heart. But it's like, it is, I think even one screening for a normal person is like, would put anyone off their, you know, it's a strong flavour.
Well, I watched it for the first time recently while I had COVID. So,
oh my God.
Yeah, it really added to the experience.
That's crazy because when I got COVID recently, I had, from a live show that Tim and I did for Worst Idea of All Time, I lost a game within the show. And my punishment was I had to watch Sex and the City 2 twice consecutively by myself. And the way the timing worked out was the best time I could do it was like, it was literally, I'd scheduled it in, but it was the day after I'd been diagnosed with COVID. So I was just like, there's something in the waters about the Sex and City 2 with COVID.
Yeah.
I love you coming on here and Big Dick and Tommy be like, yeah, you watched it once during COVID?
Yeah. I'm literally double the man you
I just liked that you used the phrasing, I got diagnosed with COVID. You don't really hear of people like describing it that way.
I'm still finding my feet with how to use language again. So obviously I'm not sticking the landing on every turn.
It did weirdly make me feel a bit better when I was sick. It was just like a reminder that there are worse things out there in the world than just, you know, having a week on the couch being ill.
You were doing it, though. I don't understand. it wasn't like court mandated that you watched it. You just...
Well, I'm surprised that you did it. If I was isolated alone with COVID, I would have lied.
Right.
100%.
I had set it up as a live stream. It was a very difficult thing to weasel out of.
You can't fake it in front of a camera. All right, well...
So let's break down the context that we get of Heart of the Desert in this film.
Yeah.
So it's the Character of Smith, who is an ex-boyfriend of Samantha.
Smith Jared, yeah.
And Smith Jared.
There's a myriad of different pronunciations of his name in the movie, which is not especially relevant. It's just I can never get past it.
A deliberate thing, or like nobody was in the same room at the same time?
The second one.
Right.
Smith Jared. It's just, they're all over the map.
His name's in reverse.
Yeah.
Surely Jared Smith is a real person's name.
I'm sure this was covered because he's in the world of Sex and the City. He is a client of Samantha's, and yep. Samantha kind of like elevates him from just a jobbing actor who works in hospitality.
She meets him when he's a waiter
He becomes a genuine superstar.
Okay.
And in the first movie, which we did Sex and City 1 for a year after we'd done Sex and City 2, so I had the context.
Perfect way to do it.
Yeah.
The Smith Jared method.
Yeah.
When I get COVID for the second time, I'm going to go back and finally watch Sex and City 1.
It makes work. It makes sense, chronologically, yeah. But she breaks up with him, and then in between the movies, he's obviously, it's reasonably amicable.
Yep.
And an hour into the Sex and the City 2, when the whole movie you're just waiting for them to go to Abu Dhabi, we finally go to a movie premiere for Heart of the Desert.
He calls her from on set, doesn't he?
He calls Samantha from on set.
He says, I want you to organise the premiere as he's midway through filming.
This is a crazy thing. He's not even midway through filming the film. He's midway through shooting a promotional still for the film. But they're doing it on location, like in front of sand dunes. It's crazy.
Right, okay.
And so he calls and he's like, I want you to, here's when the premiere is in New York. I want you to be on the red carpet with me. And she's like, okay, I'll go along. And so in Sex and City, we go to the premiere of the movie. And there's a red carpet and there's a lot of hoopla. And Miley Cyrus is there.
Right. Okay.
Is she in the movie or she's
we don't know if she's in the movie, but she's at the premiere.
Right.
Okay.
And she
could be in the movie. Maybe that's why
she's
there.
Yeah, let's file that away.
Yeah, absolutely. And so they go along, and it's obvious, they don't highlight the fact that the movie's going to be terrible, but even in the world of Sex and the City 2, it feels like everyone's like, this is going to be a bit of a fizzer.
Yeah.
Very rich.
It's kind of telling too that they have the premiere, he's like, oh, and of course the premiere is going to be in New York. Why would that happen?
the home of cinema.
Yeah, exactly.
As far away in America as you can get from Hollywood.
You guys haven't heard of the Tribeca Film Festival? Come on, guys.
I don't know if this got entered into that. I'm sure that they applied for a lot of festivals.
Yes.
There'll be some pretty fucking freaky laurels on the bottom of this poster.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You know,
MTV Kids Choice.
So
at this premiere, Samantha meets Sheikh. Who is a producer.
At the after party, she meets a sheikh from Abu Dhabi, from the United Arab Emirates.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And she's talking to him through Smith, and Smith's like, well, to be fair, this is the woman Samantha who, I was just a waiter, and then I met Samantha, and she made the world see me as a star. And the sheikh says to Samantha, wow, maybe you could do the same thing for Abu Dhabi.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, okay. And then that sets off the rest of Sex and the City 2 is like, she and the girls go on this PR trip where they're going to plump up the concept of the Middle East and how it's modern to, the Western world.
Right.
And it's like, it's a cataclysmically bad chain of events for the movie. Like it becomes, it's fucking crazy. Sex and the City 2 is crazy. But anyway.
Well, I thought Samantha was a columnist.
No, that's Carrie.
Yeah, Samantha's.
Carrie. Oh, Samantha's the sex one.
She puts the sex in Sex and the City.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Carrie's the city.
But so what we can tell from this is that the way that the movie is funded is like, if it's been funded by this guy who's self-aware about the way that the Middle East is perceived by the Western world,
right?
And he's still working on that PR beyond the film that's been produced. Mm-hmm. It's like, what is the grounding for, it looks like the movie poster that I think you guys have seen, mm-hmm. and like the actual, the background for Heart of the Desert looks like a traditional, white guy in the Middle East who's, who's
very, very Lawrence of Arabia. Yeah.
Presumably this is the photo that he's been flown back onto location promotional still.
It's good to know that we have that because that looks like a green screen, so they've wasted their money. But B, we know that this movie has a huge budget to work with. If they're flying back over there for one poster shot in front of a generic sand dune that they could have gotten off of Adobe still images, they have money. This is a big budget production.
Yeah.
Yes,
and
very
this
true.
Is rare for this podcast is that there's a very clear... easily available online. The first thing when you Google Heart of the Desert, Sex and the City 2, mm-hmm. the first thing that comes up is like high-res version of the poster on the portfolio website of the guy who designed it, right? Yeah. The graphic designer.
Yes.
And his little and his blurb here about it says, a big plot point is this movie, Heart of the Desert. And as always, the poster has to be absolutely believable and not a fake-looking throwaway effort. Now look at this font. What he thinks is not a fake-looking throwaway
needs
effort.
Needs to be
like,
believable, huh? Fonts.com. And then, like, yeah, it's got Heart of the Desert written in, like, the most sort of... It's that type of like kind of dusty looking spray painted on the side of a Jeep, but has been worn away.
The font
like,
would just be called Army.
Absolutely,
It looks like the first font they practiced using for like Black Hawk Down or something. And then we'll do it on the day. We'll get the right one.
This is just a standard to give you an idea.
We'll get a custom font for the actual. Yeah.
I just also want to add, it's crazy because when he's doing the promotional shoot in the desert. The child and the gun aren't there, you know, like, and he's very much like, when you see him on the phone in the movie, he's very much just been doing it.
Yeah.
Smith Jared is wearing military camo pants, the forest camo too. They're not. Yeah. And he's got like a green.
You'd be surprised just past those dunes is the most lush forest you've seen.
Most of this war is in an oasis.
Right. If we're thinking there's a lot of money in this, it's like, we're going jungle, we're going desert, we're going all over the world.
That's true, because also if you think about the way they want to frame the Middle East, it's like they don't just want to show what our perceptions are, just like, this war-torn place. They're like, there's a variety of landscapes. It's very, you know, diverse with respect to the biology of it. And
Indoor skiing.
There's a dome.
James Bond style, maybe he has like a skiing thing during it.
Inside the man-made slopes. Perfect.
And like leaping off a cliff and jumping into a helicopter and then crashes into the wall.
You know, you could get him through a lot of different backgrounds in the one action sequence if it's inside of like Epcot, the Epcot equivalent.
Alright, file this away.
He's got like an M16 strapped to his back and he's holding like either an injured or a sick or a dead or a tired child.
Tired. Looks tired to me.
And this is for me, this is like the fact that this makes the poster.
Yep.
Him carrying this child.
Yes.
Right. It's not just a throwaway bit where there's like, you know, 1 2-minute sequence where he's like, you know, carrying a child out of a building that's been blown up or something. Yeah. This is a key part of the movie.
Well, and also this child is also wearing camo.
He's draped the child in his own.
In his own, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's his jacket.
There's a world where he has to carry this child the whole movie.
Yeah.
Like the whole movie is his
transport. I think so.
Like a reverse Saving Private Ryan where he's got Private Ryan, but it's like a kid.
Right.
And he's got to take him somewhere.
Yeah, or like a Pink Panther where the goal is the kid.
Right.
The
child.
Maybe he's got to take him skiing. He finds him in the desert.
Oh. Yeah.
That's his one thing he wants
is
to
this
do.
Is this sort of like a...
Okay. Please.
Is this like a three men and a baby kind of situation?
One man and a baby.
One man and a child,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, mid-war situation. He's just like, I'm stuck with this kid. How do you bloody change its nappy? And it's like, I'm 10. I'm not.
Okay, I do like the idea that this whole movie is like an escort mission from a video game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks very much like... And this kid, I don't know where he's from. But he looks Middle Eastern, so maybe this kid is a local.
I would say that's fair to assume.
Now, boys, I can sense some hesitation here. You're worried about you sort of tiptoeing around, sort of being delicate with the fact that we're, you know, talking about the Middle East.
Sure.
But let me remind you, and Guy, you'll know this intimately, the source material that this came from, Sex and the City 2, famously one of the most non-deft touches in all of cinema in regards to dealing with the Middle East.
The most bumbling representation of, like, you know, Western interpretation of the Middle East. Like, Sex and the City 2 is a truly horrifically racist and deeply problematic text.
Cool. Okay.
And so this movie exists inside of that setting.
Right.
And so if we want to be faithful to the source material and actually recreate Heart of the Desert as it exists inside of Sex and City 2, there's a chance at least one of us is going to have to go somewhere uncomfortable.
I know, during this,
it's in world.
Socially, in real world context, you feel like you got to be delicate, but in the context of this, that's not what's going on, unfortunately.
Further to that, in the world of Hollywood phonies, we are Hollywood movie executives.
Mm.
So we can do pretty much anything.
Well, that's right. Yeah.
I'm jacking off into a pop plan. Yeah.
All these meetings are behind closed doors.
Yeah.
It's just, this is exciting to me because it is that one important detail I keep coming back to in my head is the Sheikh is like, he's got a lot of money, obviously, and he's attacking, like, it's all a marketing scheme, and he's trying to attack the Western dollar from as many angles as possible.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so this to me, even though the movie is a template from, like, a very traditional, boring sort of war, you know, white savior war film,
mm-hmm. right,
it's like, there has to be some sort of tourism campaign.
This is where the bloody hell are you.
Inside of it.
Yeah, great.
I feel so embarrassed I said where the bloody hell
are you. It's huge. And they made it in New Zealand, you know. That was for us in New Zealand. It was Lara Bingles saying, well, where the fuck are you?
Well, I'm
at home, Lara. Yeah. You know, I'm 13.
I'm way better.
Yeah, it's quite nice here.
These aren't my calls.
Okay. I like that. So this whole movie is secret.
It's a secret pitch to
secret marketing,
yeah,
but would be very plain-faced to anyone paying attention.
Yep.
I like that a lot.
Okay, so.
But do you think there's a bit of like an identity crisis in this film where we're saying it exists in the world of Sex and the City 2, so there's like some pretty dodgy sort of representation of the Middle East, mm-hmm. but at the same time it is a covert tourism campaign.
Right.
So, you know, those two ideas are kind of butting heads with each other constantly throughout the film.
I mean, but the very thing, it's a sort of a babushka doll because that's exactly what was happening in Sex and the City 2. Mm. Sex and the City 2 was like a marketing campaign for
Middle
East. And it was also, within the marketing campaign, it was also racist. You know,
right.
It's the same thing existing inside of the bigger thing.
All right.
I think that our goal should be to make a legitimately, welcoming portrait of the Middle East.
This feels like a social studies project. You know, when everyone gets a country from around the
world? Yeah.
We've got the United Arab Emirates.
Yeah.
And our job is to go, hey, sometimes the WWE comes here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I just remember another great moment just relevant to the way that the characters in Sex and City should treat the United Arab Emirates, which is like Aiden, who's one of Carrie's old love interests, is that they meet up or whatever, and they run into each other by chance. And he's like, "Yeah, I'm here on a buying trip." And he's like, "He's been there a lot." And he's like, "I try and remember a new. There's seven Emirates. I try and remember a new one every time I visit." He's like, "I'm up to two." And it's like, this guy's been there at least five times, and he's like leading with this in conversation.
Oh yes, okay, great. God, I honestly, it's so tone deaf.
I really recommend watching it for something that's universally agreed upon to be one of the worst films of all time.
I actually
didn't have too bad of a time watching it.
Okay, I'm going to wait till I get COVID.
I think it is best seen through the lens of COVID fog.
As like sort of a starting place, like obviously there is military action taking place in this movie. He's got a gun, he's wearing camo.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
You need an enemy to be fighting. We can't have that enemy be like America versus anywhere in the Middle East because this is a tourism campaign.
Yes.
So what if the people who are being fought, the antagonists of this movie are... Perhaps a more universally appealing tourist destination.
Yes,
that
yes.
have become the aggressors. Okay.
So, what's the rival? If you're booking a holiday and you're thinking and you're choosing between, you know,
one of the countries that has the most successful tourism campaign, especially from a movie, is New Zealand.
Oh wow!
So
here
we go. New Zealand have attacked the United Arab Emirates.
Yes. Well, we have a fledgling cricket rivalry that I'm in from my childhood. We used to play them.
Okay, maybe that's kicked off really hard.
There's some kind of standoff, a hostage situation. Yeah. The New Zealand cricket team have gone militant. And they're sweeping through the United Arab Emirates like ISIS.
And
taking town and by town.
Maybe incidentally, like Smith Jarrett or his character is he's like, you know, he's an army guy and he's on break and he goes to a cricket game. So he's like a New Zealand
American military guy and everyone else is like, why the fuck do you like cricket?
Why do you like cricket?
He's like, I don't know, man. I like cricket.
Yeah.
It's a fun game.
Bit of an Anglophile.
And so he's at the stadium when this whole thing kicks off. It's like the last guy the New Zealand cricket team would want to be there. It's this sort of covert ops expert. We're going to get away with this.
Who has a working knowledge of cricket because he is a fan. He's one of the few.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So we open on a cricket pitch.
Sure.
Are we thinking? Should we do a bit of his backstory? We need to set up Smith's character a little bit. Like, who is he?
I think he was in. He was over there in the war. He was like, you know, when like a fine artist is someone who's they've become so good at technically proficient art, like they're the best at one thing, one practice in the world, and then all of a sudden like, I've become so good at this that I'm going to go back to the very beginning and do the most basic version of it. So mm-hmm. he's like right. he's like probably the deadliest man in the world.
Yeah.
And he's been sent to the United Arab Emirates as like a peacekeeper, so it's like he's capable of anything.
Oh.
But he's actually there in like a sort of mediator. He's sort of like moved past that part of his life where
sure.
he just did it. And he's there as a peacekeeper, so he's sworn off violence, and he's basically just there to like keep an eye across everything.
Mm-hmm.
In the best interests of both the United Arab Emirates and the United States, and so he's a
security guard.
Yes,
at a big like at a shopping mall.
He's a security guard at like the giant dome, has like all of the different things in it.
Okay,
I'm trying to bring it back to the title because if this is a tourism campaign,
yes.
Well, what's the true heart of the desert?
Right, oh. The capitalism that exists in the middle of the desert that we
right,
can get you into.
Okay.
So, he's like the security guard at
he's
the most
the head
beautiful
of security.
Head
come
of
on,
security.
He's
yeah.
not
yeah.
a security
yeah.
guard.
Oh, yeah, but he's a man of the people. He's head of security, but he also works a shift a week.
Absolutely.
He could, they all know he's the most dangerous
he's
one.
He's shaking hands with the coffee people. He's, yeah, you know, yes. Yeah,
they
yeah.
keep trying to get him to take on more responsibilities. He's like, that life. I left that life behind.
That's exactly. So, it opens with him. He's in like the control center, and he's on a very important call or whatever,
yep.
And then it's like it's this beautiful sort of one shot Scorsese style thing. Oh. Where he's on the phone and he gets off. He's like, "Yeah, you got it. Just get it done." And then he puts the phone down and he gets into like an elevator from his plush office and he goes down to the ground floor. And then all of a sudden the Karen falls and he's just walking through and he's saying hello to the little people.
Yes,
yeah.
Like you
yes,
say,
yes.
shaking hands with the
yes.
coffee cart.
Yes.
He's sort of like, he knows
names.
Everyone's
absolutely.
Name. Yeah.
He
yeah.
keeps going like, "Hey, Michael. Hey, John." And they're like, "Oh, it's Terry."
Yeah.
Yeah. He thinks he's got it.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. I like this.
I reckon that is because the actor forgot. Because again, in this world, it's a bad movie.
That's right.
Yeah. Yep.
So, but he's walking through this whole, he's walking through the dome, which has got like, it's where you got the skiing and it's got yep. like, you know, it's like a mega mall / Epcot / Disneyland. It's like every
yes.
single form of capitalism
sure.
is wedged inside of this biodome.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an exciting day because it's the day that he's finally getting to see a cricket game, you know, because cricket hasn't been played in the United Arab Emirates for a while or whatever. And he's like,
yep.
"I'm going to the game tonight." And
yeah.
And it's like, "What do you mean? You know, what do you mean you're going to the game?" And he's like, yeah. "No, you know." But,
and
you
every
know.
Time, yeah. it's clear that he doesn't know anything about cricket. Like, so, and the script writers didn't. So,
yeah, that's
like,
true. This is an American film. It's just funded by. The,
but
yeah.
I think
yeah.
we
gonna
do
see
still...
some wickets tonight, brother.
yeah, yeah.
But like, we still do see him at his house, like firing up the VPN to get on Wide World of Sports because that's been the only way he can catch any cricket
yeah,
in this country.
Yeah,
right.
yeah.
But he's watching... like sort of tossing an NFL ball to himself. The whole
yeah, yeah.
right.
Yeah. Can't wait to see someone catch a six. You
yeah,
know,
exactly.
like it's
yeah.
almost.
yeah, yeah.
And Shane
yeah,
Warren great. Is my he's going to live forever. Like
yeah,
he's
yeah.
he's almost there, but not quite. And
yep.
yeah, open on him going through down to his everyman post.
Yeah.
And he's taking every tourist opportunity along the way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
45 minute
he's,
opening.
Yeah.
Sequence.
He's
oh,
advertising
true.
Everything. And I've had another brainwave where it's like
okay.
the child that we see in the poster
yes.
is some, like he's someone he's taken in, like they're close, you know,
okay.
he's someone he's taken in from, he's had a hard life inside of Abu Dhabi and
mm-hmm.
they've become like friendly. He's like a fatherly figure, like a big brother type thing. And
sure.
he's like,
yes.
he's also a cricket fan. And this is the first cricket game in the United Arab Emirates for a while. It's been played between New Zealand and the UAE.
Yep.
And the child friend is like, you know, responsible for taking out the, you know when they get kids involved in the
yeah,
game?
And
so
yeah,
like
the ring bearer.
Taking out the ball or whatever. And
yeah.
so it's this big moment for the child as well. And so like there's a lot of excitement and pomp and ceremony.
Hey,
what's
kid, I've pulled a few strings
yeah.
for you, you know. You're going to be able to
but
do something
this,
special
well,
today.
This also sets up the chance for this kid to be like trapped inside. When the New
oh,
Zealand
yeah.
cricket team turn, you know. and he's like watching from the stands and he's like, oh, this is the last guy that they should have fucked. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
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 that's
yeah.
He's saying that constantly throughout the film.
yeah.
Every like 15 minutes, he says, I'm the last guy.
One of the, he's just trying out the beautiful water slide inside of this dome. Halfway down the water slide, he's like, don't fuck with me. He keeps insisting upon it the whole way through to give you an idea.
He eats several meals in the course of this one shot, right?
All of them delicious looking.
The service here. Wow.
There's a pasta from an Italian restaurant. Yes, you know, he has snails from the French restaurant.
Gets a new suit tailored. He spends a long time. This kid popping in and out. He's like, can we go to the cricket thing? He's like, I got more beautiful sights. Yeah.
Websites and phone numbers for travel agents that specialize in the United Arab Emirates have constantly been flashed up the bottom of the screen.
Perfectly shot, like 45-minute infomercial for capitalism.
He's going through, and he finally is at the cricket pitch. The game is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And he is talking with this kid, kneels down, has a little cricket ball in his hand, and he's like, hey, what's a kid's name? Billy?
Yeah.
Something lame. Like, hey, Billy.
Billy's perfect.
And every time he says Billy, you get the same idea as with the staff he was talking to, where Billy is responding like it's not his name.
It's been too long. It's been 5 years now.
Like, he treats it like a nickname. He accepts that it's what he's going to be called by this guy forever.
Yeah.
He's got a cricket ball in his hand. He's like, hey, Billy, I know that it's been 10 years since there's been cricket in the UAE, and you're 9 years old, so this will be your first cricket game. Mm-hmm. So, hey, kid, catch. But he can't catch.
Cricket He's never hasn't even been seen there. Cricket.
He doesn't know how to catch the ball, so the ball hits his chest, rolls away.
Yep.
He's like, damn.
Yep.
So we set up, that might come back later.
Okay.
A little bit
of right.
Oh, that's nice.
There's a little thing there where, so he's got, and
as I also think, because, you know, it's an American version of cricket, and so they're like, he's bowling the first, you know, there's the first pitch, it's like, he's bowling the first ball.
Yes. He's going to sing the national anthem and bowl the first ball.
Yeah, the batsman drives it back straight at the kid. Okay,
so,
great.
So the New Zealand cricket team, they turn. They turn during this game.
Yeah.
Because at this point, I'm thinking, we've said that this is like huge budget in this movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To the extent where we couldn't even afford proper graphic design for the poster. Like we even used up that part of the budget in this film. Yeah. So I'm thinking we've got to have a big... I just keep thinking about the way we're setting this up.
Mm-hmm.
Something along the lines of Bane in The Dark Knight Rises. Yes. 100%. Blowing up the football field. So I'm thinking we're getting some kind of action like that happening.
Well, cutaways, right? As this is happening, as everyone's like taking their seats, we're cutting away to like
the New Zealand team coming in on like a Black Hawk, right?
Because I think what's happened is like the New Zealand government, I think they're operatives for the New Zealand government who are fearful, who are like looking over at the UAE and they're like, they're taking, you know, even though they're different destinations, like they're taking our tourist dollar.
Yeah, right.
So they're operating from a place of fear. And the cricket team, maybe some of them are like, they are performing against their own internal instincts of having to do whatever this thing is, because it's like, you know, they're towing
so
the company line.
They're naturally
so friendly.
Are we getting cameos from the actual New Zealand cricket team, or are they?
I think they're in. Yeah, I think
they're in.
They're on the helicopter. Maybe they have had their mouths gagged and they're bound up on the helicopter with this New Zealand military team replacing them.
So
the cricket team didn't want to do
it because
this like rogue New Zealand military who
and they're
like,
all we get a little like suiting up scene where they're strapping on their pads
and the whole time during that 45 minute opening sequence like just people in the background keep going like, how shit's Lord of the Rings? Trying to downplay every
have you,
you know
seen Peter
not...
Jackson's recent work?
You know it's not beautiful to me, mountains don't like them.
A lot
of shit talking. I'm having a hard time staying present here, boys. It's really needling me, but
these are the villains. So
this is a bad movie. We don't agree. Okay, this is all hypothetical. Yeah,
but these New Zealanders are real fucks, you know.
It is coming very easily to us.
Yeah, it's flowing out.
You know what's easier to get around? One landmass separated into two islands. I'm out. This rogue military pro New Zealand tourism
fake cricket team
have come down. You see the real cricket team bound up. They're all putting on their fucking bullshit.
Yep.
And like their shin guards are beeping and booping because they're military. Sure,
yeah. And yeah, the bats are all like secretly loaded with, you know.
Fold some bullets in.
Yeah.
Ball is a grenade.
And yeah, and so I think New Zealand wins the toss and they bat first. And so we've got it all set up now. We've got these covert operatives pretending to be cricket players out in the middle of the pitch. We've got Billy, the young child, the sort of the heart of the desert in essence, as tethered
he's
to.
He's the heart of the desert. Yeah. That's beautiful. Yeah, okay.
And you think it's tourism, but it turns out it's the young boy.
That's the real reason to come.
He's sending down the first ball or whatever. And even somehow maybe we see the ball that he's carrying out to the pitch get swapped. You know, like he's walking out with the players before the national anthem. And one of the New Zealand players is like, can I have a look at that? And he throws it to him and he swaps out the ball for like.
Could I pitch an alternate?
Yeah.
He's tossing the ball to himself. It goes out of frame and then a different ball comes back.
Oh, yes.
Right.
It's a bit of movie magic.
Pan up and there's like one like the identifiable soldier who's got like a big beard or some tattoos or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that you can keep him, you can anchor with him as like the big burly guy you've got to fight later.
This is a I'm just luxuriating in this beautiful detailed, you know, establishment of the world we've set up here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are spending a lot of time on the first like 5 minutes of the plot.
What are you talking about? Yeah. This is the 45 to 50. We've ripped through the first 45 minutes.
We can come back and pepper some more detail in there later on.
I reckon we cast the commanding officer.
Yes, there should be like the what's his name in The Rock, the fucking the main enemy.
Yeah,
guy.
Okay.
Who's that guy in The Rock? The movie The Rock with Nick Cage.
I'm trying to remember. It's not Anthony Hopkins. Is it Tom?
Is it Ed Harris?
It is Ed Harris.
Yeah. Well done.
Okay. That figure, the dangerous one.
Yeah.
Could we reach for Sam Neill?
I would love to get
Sam Neill.
It's got because it's got to be a New Zealander.
He doesn't just get out of bed for anything.
No.
He's picky.
It's you know he's one of those guys. It's like when Robin Williams did 1 hour photo where it's like he's such a genial figure. It would be so nice to see him play against Type.
I would love that. Event Horizon is the only one I can think of where he's a villain.
Peaky Blinders is a bit of a cunt, but he's
usually in good stuff. So it would be good to see Sam Neill in this because you know he's been tricked.
Well, that's it. This is just really a thing where it's like New Zealand are the bad guy. We're going to be very unflattering to the country and the people of New Zealand. So it's like the gymnastics that we pull off to get him on board.
Right. Yeah.
We get a bunch of gymnasts to bring in a lot of money.
It's so spectacular. He couldn't possibly say that.
That'd be great. He's revealed when the helicopter comes down on the pitch to like let the team out by some soldiers walking out of the way of him. And then you see it's him.
Right.
And the camera zooms in and he's got maybe some line, some sort of like a...
We could have a line.
We could give Sam Neill a line.
I think he should have... At least one line during the movie is my idea.
Okay, it's agreed.
I guess he's posing as the coach of the team, right?
Yeah.
That would make sense. He's a bit old to play.
Right.
Yeah.
He's like the team's manager.
Yeah.
Scar across the eye.
Okay.
Second scar across the other
Double
eye.
Double scars.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's got twice as many scars as he does lines.
Well, at this point.
Scar kind of connecting them diagonally and then three more scars in a Z shape. So he's got scars that spell out NZ.
Oh, wow.
I like that.
I thought you were going to do a tic-tac-toe.
No.
Okay, he's got the NZ.
He's got NZ.
Or it could be a fern.
Across the face.
It could be a fern scar.
Kia ora, motherfuckers, he says as he gets out of the helicopter.
I like that.
Under his breath, he's not revealed himself yet. The cricket game has begun. Billy's on the thing.
Yeah, so Billy sends down the first ball, and he can't catch, but he's sort of got a natural aptitude. You know, maybe this is another thing. He does have a natural aptitude. It's just been untapped. And so he sends down a pretty reasonable delivery.
It's a good bowler, but he can't catch.
Yeah. Okay. But he sends it out, and the ball's been changed. And, you know, Martin Guptill, whoever's opening the batting, or whoever the version just fucking smacks it and he sends it right up into the sky and like as soon as there's contact with the bat it's an explosive device of some description. It sends a strong statement to the fans, to the players at the field. It's like, this is not your traditional cricket game. And
I think that's fair to say.
A lot of the people there, though, they haven't seen cricket in years. So a lot of the UAE fans, they're like, I don't remember this, but I haven't seen cricket in a while.
Oh, clearly, like, beefed up military men are walking out instead of the New Zealand cricket
team. Yeah,
yeah.
But again,
yeah, but the BBL,
like,
it's, there's a lot of, like, fireworks and
so,
shit.
Yeah, it is, yeah, the ball is fireworks. So it's not super, it's like New Zealand's version of being an aggressor where it's like, it's mostly just kind of nice to look at. But they're like, we're sending a signal.
It's a
flare. So it's a big fireworks and it's, you know, I don't know, it spells out something.
There
it could
you
read
go.
Something.
But no one's that put off yet. People are just thinking like, oh, cricket's cool.
Except,
like, why haven't we?
Smith Jarrett knows what's going on.
Yes,
he gets it. He's the only one in the he's the only one in the stadium who's been watching cricket at all in the last 10 years.
And so, so he sees this happen, and everyone else is like, whoa, and they're all celebrating, and all of a sudden he's mobile, he's
pushing to the crowd.
He's trying to get down to the pitch, and maybe he pushes to everyone, he gets down, and like
he's pushing down, and it's like the start where people are like, oh,
he's
like, no, not now. Being friendly has turned into a curse. It's backfired.
But I do appreciate it, and God, everyone is so nice.
Everyone's really nice. Yeah. You'd be surprised.
Trying to tell everyone to get out, and he's like, Michael, John, get out. And they're like, talking to me.
It's Muhammad. Like,
they're giving him gifts
about?
And shit.
But he's running down the security there, and they're like, sir, you know, we have to ask you to just watch the game. He's like, you don't understand. Something's happening. And then I think the military operatives who pretend to be the opening batsmen, like, scoop up Billy.
Yeah.
You know, and all of a sudden, I don't know. Where's Sam Neill and all that? Like, is there a...
He's standing, like, edge of the pitch, kind of overseeing, I suppose.
I guess he's by the sidelines.
Again, he's just watching Bane
style. Is that
style?
The race?
Yeah.
And maybe this is where he gives a big speech to the stadium.
He gets beamed up on the screen.
It's time to reveal our intentions.
And he starts plugging his wine.
Yeah, two paddocks.
Sam Neill gets a whiff of, like, that this is just a tourist venture, and he's like, that's how we get him on board. He's look, okay, if you're just doing this big ad, if you want me in this and to betray my country, you got to at least let me wedge in an ad for those beautiful two paddocks wines.
Every line he gets a mention of two, you know, like...
He's just always holding a bottle of
Okay. Wow, this cricket pitch is the size of two paddocks.
Which makes me thirsty.
Yeah.
For a refreshing shot. I don't know.
Well,
this arid heat.
That's his pitch for why that you New Zealand is the better tourism destination than the UAE, because this isn't grape country.
He's wedging in an alternate viewpoint in this movie, whose entire goal is to advertise the UAE.
But they belittle grapes for the remainder of the movie too, and the wine, which he's mad about in the final cut.
Sure.
Belittle grapes.
They're like, grapes don't even taste good, and when you crush them up and make them into
wine,
we
need to do is continue to separate Billy from Smith.
Yeah.
So that, you know, then we've got motive for him to be chasing these fucking guys.
Absolutely.
Through the,
So he's snatched up by the team, taken as a hostage.
They fire off another firework that really is like, no, seriously, this is like
a declaration of war.
Is it a declaration? Is that what we're going with?
I guess
so.
The motive is like, New Zealand are, what did we say? They're getting jealous that the UAE has become such a popular tourist destination.
So they're trying to create a conflict to turn off the idea of the UAE as an appealing tourist destination.
Okay. Yep.
So that the people who would have gone to New Zealand, who announced it, going to the United Arab Emirates.
Sure.
Which is, it is often a this or that situation, you know. It's always one or the other.
Coming out of COVID, I'm like, where do I go? Abu Dhabi or Queenstown?
It's like we're removing the this of the UAE and we're trying to put all of the energy on the that of New Zealand.
Yeah.
So I guess the New Zealanders cannot state as their goal publicly what it is, because it's like,
right. so if that's
your goal, we're just definitely not going to New Zealand.
Right. The most duplicitous thing they could do is that, like, the fireworks cricket ball gets smacked up and it says something, and then they take Billy under the guise of, like, we're protecting, you know, something's happened here. We have to protect this child.
Yes.
Okay.
And everyone's sort of like, it's a bit fishy, but maybe it checks out. And Smith Jarrett's like, this is not the one, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. So he's also got to, like, open the eyes of those around him that everything is not as it seems.
I like that. Yeah, they're snatching up this kid, being like, the cricket game's not safe here, and the United Arab Emirates is not a safe destination for a family holiday.
So maybe
this child does not fit it here.
Yes.
They've switched out the balls, but they've made it seem like, well, you know, because, like, they're not hosting the match.
Yeah.
The UAE is. So, like, the balls are exploding. What the fuck is going on here? So,
and their motivation is that we're going to get Billy to New Zealand, and then everyone will see how great Billy's life is in New Zealand.
He's going to have a great time, yeah.
He's been the poster boy for UAE travel so far because he just loves it there so much.
He's like the Lara Bingle of the UAE. He was in an ad campaign for the UAE, and what a great destination. So they're poaching him.
Yeah, his rum was, here I bloody well am.
Okay, so Billy's being kidnapped to be in an ad for New Zealand tourism.
Right.
Great.
And everyone in the stadium's like, oh, good thing they saved that boy on the pitch. Smith Jared, he knows what's going on. Yeah. He's trying to run after them. They're taking him to the helicopter.
Yeah, yeah.
He's getting down onto the field and dodging the luxurious seating and world-class stadium.
Yeah, maybe like the players have got Billy off the pitch, and then Smith Jarrett gets through security. He's like, I have to go to Billy, and he runs onto the field and he comes face to face with Sam Neill.
Yeah, yes.
Just on the tail end of a fantastic glass of the 2019 Pinot Noir from Two Paddocks, and he's having the last sups, and then he holds the glass in front of him and he says, look at the legs on that.
Yeah. And also, when this film is in cinemas, the candy bar doesn't serve anything else. That's in Sam Neill's contract. You can't get a Coke. You can't get popcorn.
Right.
You can only get a Chardonnay.
So he's standing sort of, in. I guess he's like hanging off the edge of the Black Hawk helicopter, right? And he's doing that.
Yeah.
And they fly off. Smith can't get to him. Oh,
The rotors of the helicopter are blowing the wine out of him.
Obviously. Yeah.
And all the people around are kind of getting like a drop or something. Like, that is good.
That is delicious. Yeah.
Smith Jarrett has to yell like, that looks delicious, but I'm going to get you.
How dare you waste that wine? Yeah, it's so precious.
Billy is being lifted up. He's like snatched under the arms of the big guy before.
Yeah.
Who,
yep.
And he's looking at the wine and they're looking at him like, when you're older, Billy.
Not for children, but it is good.
You would love it.
This feels like the end of an act one where it's like, you know, we've set it all up here.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
The helicopter disappears from view. And Smith Jarrett is left alone on the cricket pitch with chaos around him as people realize, like, well, this cricket game's gone wrong.
And just realizing.
This isn't an everyday cricket game. Yeah. They're all starting to clue on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he has, like, a determined look on his face and is served a beautiful fruit platter.
He's looking off in the distance and damn, that's good.
If you thought that wine was good, you got to try this fruit, you know.
Yeah.
So,
like,
so what, everyone's so got to get this.
It really muddies the shot
holds for way too long, and then it slowly fades to black after a while. Yeah.
So okay, so Billy's been taken to New Zealand. Is that what? Do we go to New Zealand now?
Can't just fly to New Zealand
direct in it.
They're going to film this ad. But just in the UAE.
I'm remembering, and this might not be in the UAE, this might be in Qatar, but there was a man-made, like, globe. Do you remember? There's a map of the world was made with, like, islands that you could live on. So it was, like, a man-made sort of map of planet Earth. So, and there's a New Zealand, obviously, represented this.
Okay.
Like, you know, so there's this small island version of New Zealand next to the rest of the world.
Yeah. It's basically like a sandbar almost, right?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
As we said, this taking place in the world of Sex and the City 2.
Yeah.
Doesn't fucking matter if it is in Qatar. We're using it in this film in the UAE.
Is good enough. That's right.
Maybe they just made another one in the UAE.
Exactly. And so they fly Billy to like New Zealand, which is like this place that represents, you know, everything that is. And you know, like Smith Jarrett's incredible military ops mastermind is like, where could they be? You know, can't figure it out. Where could they be?
An actual map of the world, and then he zooms right in off the coast of the UAE and sees the second New Zealand is I think I might have an idea.
He goes to New Zealand to look for Billy, and people are just spitting on him in the street.
He scours
the country, and then he's like, he's not here.
We've got to see him have that loss, and we've got to see just how nasty New Zealanders truly are.
We have a fake New Zealand in this country. Yeah, of course. So
he's
begrudgingly putting back on the old military gear. He doesn't want to get back into it.
Yeah.
And he's got maybe some other character who he can confide in.
He's got to have a mate,
The head of tourism for the UAE, who's just the loveliest person you'll ever meet.
Absolutely. Nothing will make you want to visit more than a conversation with this guy.
And he's talking about, look, Billy, he was a kid off the streets, and he kind of became like a...
Not that the streets are bad, by the way.
No. That's how he survived until the age of nine.
You'd be surprised, actually, how safe the streets are.
He didn't even need to have...
The welfare system is so...
Parents are just a luxury here. You don't need them because you can just survive on the kindness of strangers, but not in New Zealand. And I'm worried about Billy. And he's suiting up to go to New Zealand. He's got all his military bullshit on. He's taken a gun, and he's like, "Ha ha! They don't have these over there, which is stupid of them."
We are vulnerable.
He's over to New Zealand, but fake New Zealand in the movie. It lands on his helicopter or whatever he's got.
Where should they film fake New Zealand?
Just a garbage dump.
Probably. Okay. Yeah,
I was going to say somewhere in Australia.
Yes.
Right?
I was going to say, or on that one lush part of the poster, which is just behind the sand dunes, where it's like...
Okay.
And maybe if he goes to New Zealand looking for leads, people on the streets are just barking at him. Like he's getting shit thrown at him all the time.
I like it being Australia. Maybe even Tasmania, which is Australia's New Zealand.
Yes.
And like, no New Zealand actors are, you know, it's all Australians because they all sound the same.
Yes. Exactly. They request to film in New Zealand and New Zealand's like, no.
Absolutely not.
Not a chance. Yeah, so it's Australia who are like, haha, this is fun for us.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
and he's walking through, you know, because the Australian accent's like the evil New Zealand accent. So immediately... It makes a lot of sense.
Yes. Exactly. If you want evil New Zealand,
everyone sounds so hostile.
Yeah, fuck you, don't.
This is how we talk, mate. Means I like you.
G'day, cunt.
Australians do hate Americans as well, though. So it'd be like, what the fuck are you doing here, Yank? Oh, you drive on the other side of the fucking road, do you, cunt? All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, they are just naturally hostile.
And
to
so
him.
He goes to him and says, I'm looking, have you seen this kid? I'm looking for this kid. And he's holding up a photo of Bill and he's like, nah, not seen it, you know, and there's no...
Fuck off, we're full, like they would be.
They would,
They would.
Nah.
Even in Tasmania, they
would. Never seen him. He's in like some rough bar and everyone's punching each other and it's all like someone's playing an out-of-tune piano in the corner and they're playing Kaysan.
God, we're going to have to ship some stuff into Hobart, though, because Hobart is very nice.
None of these people are actors. This is just like bad grandpa style where we just turn up and it's just like Tasmanians acting naturally.
Yes.
Give us the performance that we need.
And he's in his army fatigues or whatever, and he's begrudging, you know, and he's like trying to find this kid. No one's paying attention. Everyone's ignoring him. And then a fight breaks out either near or around him in the bar. And it's the first time he has to take action.
Right.
And like step back into a life that he thought he'd left behind.
Mm-hmm.
In his quest to recover Billy and get to the bottom of whatever nefarious thing is happening behind the scenes here. And so he like gets in the way of this big fight.
Yep.
And the bar, you know, it's like a record scratcher and the bar drops down to silence.
Yep.
He's like, has anyone seen this child?
He's been so violent during this
fight.
I think he's like, gone Rambo and he's murdered a lot of people, right?
It's gruesome.
We've seen him like rip an esophagus out of him. And when he says anyone seen this child, he's holding up the esophagus and it's like a sort of, you know, it's like a comedy beat, but it's a bit too grisly to be a comedy beat. And he's like, oh, sorry, and like drops the esophagus out of his pocket, takes a photo of Billy. But he's killed everyone, so no one asks.
Exactly.
Super gruesome. This is where a lot of the budget is going in this scene of like fake blood and organs and like
he smashes a bottle of Sam Neill's wine over someone's head and as they're dying they're drinking it and they're like, oh this is how I want it to go.
My last moments were so beautiful and delicious.
And there's probably a deleted scene on the Blu-ray which is like the funeral of that character, and in the eulogy someone's like, he died doing what he loved. Drinking a 2020 Syrah from Sam Neill's two paddocks.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't get to age as gracefully as this beautiful guy.
Yeah, okay. All the deleted scenes are just ads.
Yeah, more ads.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
And then he leaves the bar, and there's like a guy in a trench coat or whatever who's like, you looking for that kid?
Oh,
I might know something.
Yeah.
Come with me.
Yeah. Who is this guy and why does he know
We need someone to know. So maybe it's like, who would be the second most famous New Zealander after Sam Neill, would you say, Guy?
Peter Jackson would be up there, maybe?
Russell Crowe?
Russell Crowe ours or yours now?
I don't know.
Maybe he should be perfect
for it because he's ambiguous. Like,
he would be good.
Or he could have been like the big tough guy at the bar.
He's got the right age range and sort of gruff demeanor. I mean, honestly, one of the most famous New Zealanders now would be Rose Matafeo, who would be quite fun to see.
Yep. Could you put a call in? I think
we could get Rose into Heart of the Desert. Yeah.
Okay. So Rose
potential
Rose
love interest as well.
Well, I think
we don't have a romance.
It's like in those Bond films, there's always like, you know, the Bond falls in love with someone who's on the wrong side of the story.
Yes, that's true.
Okay.
So she takes him to like this underground high tech sort of facility.
Yes.
Where I'm just looking up a name that I've forgotten, but it will be important.
Okay.
I look forward to hearing it.
I'm just going to go with a different name.
What?
Who? You hear the voice. You're looking for that kid? Come in here. And it's James Brayshaw.
What?
Cricket commentator.
Okay.
Who has seen the whole thing unfold.
Sure.
He's like, we've been tracking this rogue cricket team for years.
Yep.
They've been causing problems up and down the pitch.
Yep.
Who's that guy like? He talks like that. The classic cricket commentator.
Richie Beno
was the one I was trying to.
Well, he's dead.
But this was filmed a while ago.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And, you know, we can use the hologram too. It would be nice to have Richie in
there. Exactly. There's a lot of audio to draw upon.
Yeah, we've got think of the budget here. You know, look at what was left with this movie poster. We've spent a lot of money.
And so the International Cricket Commission, the ICC, is following these people, and they're like, you're just the man we're looking for. We've been trying to get him for ages. We know where they are. They're actually back in the United Arab Emirates.
Yeah, they're in the new New Zealand.
They're in New Zealand. It's this small, tiny little model.
It's like it's one building.
They're all quite cramped in there. We want your help to take them down. How does that sound?
That's a good plot point. I like that.
Okay. So we've got Brayshaw and we've got Richie Beno.
And we've got Rose.
Rose has led Smith Jarrod too.
She's the field agent.
Exactly. Yeah. Rose is in field.
Sure. Yeah.
You two are going to go over there and you're going to take down this cricket thing. And Smith Jarrod is like, I'm only interested in saving my like kind of brother guy, the face of United Arab Emirates tourism.
Little Billy.
Are you sure that's his name?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah. I've been calling him for years.
He goes by many names. You might know him as the Heart of the Desert.
Yeah. Because that was his little bit in the ad campaign.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
And so I suppose he's been out of it for a while, though. So they're like, we saw you can handle yourself in the bar fight, but we need to train you up.
Mm-hmm.
And so him and Rose.
Oh, montage.
Yeah.
Stays in New Zealand for the montage.
And it's just them, it's them drinking wine flights from two paddocks. It's like them on the actual vineyards. You're going to have to be able to distinguish the taste between a Cabernet Sauvignon and, you know.
Doing like, digger station menus going skiing in Queenstown.
Because how you got to prepare to be in New Zealand. You know, you've got to like be able to experience those high-end tourism experiences.
Doing some bungee jumping.
Their training switches to very pro-New Zealand tourism in the middle of this movie.
Yeah.
We get tricked mid-movie. Yeah. It's just like Sam Neill's just and Rose are throwing up stuff and we're too spineless to say no, and then we see the final edit, we're like, they snuck a fucking pro-New Zealand on us. They did us dirty, boys.
Yeah, alright. But I guess the whole time they're like, we're trying to make them act like disgusted at it.
Yeah.
It's like, what a beautiful view.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
They're doing withstanding training. You've got to be able to withstand the horrors that the New Zealand.
Right. Yeah. Midway through, ladies and gentlemen, crowded house.
Turn
this shit off.
Lord.
What
the fuck? She's changed. She kept shushing me.
Okay.
Running through like just a speedboat on the beautiful. I went on a speedboat in New Zealand.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
And they're on that.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm on there too. And I'm having a great time. Nice. I'm 14.
I love it.
I'm
I
there
guess
with
we should all
You're 14.
Wow.
So they go through a whole bunch of New Zealand.
And then they finally, they get trained up and then they're ready and they get put on an army plane from New Zealand to New Zealand.
Yep, right.
Well, actually, probably they'd have to land in New Australia just because it would draw too much attention to land in New Zealand. So they land in like New Perth or whatever. It's far enough away that
they only have to just like kind of stroll over though.
But there's a hedge between them or something.
You don't notice.
And thus begins Act 3.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The confrontation.
Oh. Yeah. So maybe the two islands of New Zealand open up on this ground map to like that. Reveal like a Thunderbirds style, yeah, yeah, okay. Underground, you know,
and yeah, and to get down to the real base, you've got to go through a really incredible wine cellar. Like temperature controlled, just beautiful. It's no amazing. Expense spared.
Yeah. It's you get to experience the taste, but also visually.
That's right, and maybe this is where their training kicks in, because it's like it's like, well, how do we know that you're not here to, you know? And they have to do some sort of. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have to decide actually whether or not they're entering under the banner of darkness, like unseen right. by you know the people, what? Or whether or not they're like undercover and they're like, hey, we're just here to.
That's why Rose is there, because on the plane over, they've been talking and sort of having some tension. Nothing really comes of it, maybe. You know, it's not a particularly romantic movie. It doesn't feel like. But okay. they've got a bit of a chat and they're talking.
Yeah, it's like in movies with The Rock where they'll just like, exactly. they'll have a woman right. there and it's like, kind yeah, of yeah. tiptoeing around the idea of a romance. There's yeah, no yeah. chemistry whatsoever, but like, then there's like exactly. a smooch in the
it's
like
the Hollywood
minute.
Thing of going sure. like he Jared Smith Smith Jared is sexless, but we want you to know that he's not gay.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah
trying
yeah,
to
yeah.
be like that.
Okay,
yeah. so he's whispering the idea of sex every sort of yeah. 45 minutes.
Yeah. What an yeah. innuendo yeah. and like yeah yeah yeah. yeah.
Oh
yeah.
man, I'm capable of an erection, you know that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've got too much respect for you as a fellow field officer.
No, yeah, yeah.
So and she.
Rose is like, no, come on, let's go.
Yeah, yeah.
they've been prepping to be undercover New Zealanders.
Yes. Yeah.
As they go. So she's
why
like.
Why is Rose doing this?
She
by the way?
Is like, let me do the talking.
But why is she acting against New Zealand?
But no, I think yeah. what happens is Rose is some sort of double agent where it's like she leads, she's gonna get Smith all the way there, and then her allegiance will be torn between like doing the right thing globally speaking, or for the UAE and for the agency, and then yeah. also right. doing the right thing by her countrymen.
I love it. And I guess the thing is like. They are doing a bit of a hostage coup. Like, it's just generally wrong.
Yeah.
But yes.
They're a splinter cell out of the main New Zealand government, this cricket team.
Okay.
They're, like, pretty extremist.
I love this. Yeah. Because then at the end, the post-credits can be like, no, it actually turns out Jacinda Ardern was behind it, and the sequel will be an escalation.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, something we have forgotten is that timeline-wise, this is like, what, 2011? So it's like, is Rose even... is Rose like a Hollywood actor, and then this film bombs, she quits acting, and then starts stand-up?
At age, what, 13 or something?
She's going okay. She's finding her voice on stage.
All right. Yeah, okay.
This is a pretty big break.
Yeah. yeah. You should have been going, like, Jermaine Clement or something. Like, really, yeah, at that,
well,
this
I think,
point.
I feel like maybe, you know, the COVID ops thing they have to get through is like, it's Brett and Jermaine are like yes. in this wine cellar where it's like, you know, and they...
Fantastic.
They
put,
so this it's like, is it's huge, a, like, stunt casting to get them in a little yeah, cameo. Yeah, 2011, that's...
You'll yeah. never find out where we've hidden the boy.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
And so they're going in as stealth New Zealanders. Rose is doing most of the talking. Yep. They're like, oh, yeah? So you're from New Zealand, are you? What's your favorite TV show? And she's like, The Project.
Yeah. Like, we didn't have that yet. Oh. So it's One News.
Okay, One News? Yeah. Yeah, I've been watching One News. And you might be better at...
We've been watching... Yeah.
Was it News. 7 Days? Is that a 7 Days show?
And I'm a big fan of the new comedy panel show, 7 Days.
Wonderful.
And they're like, checks out, have a glass of wine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they get separated at some point, and Smith Jarrett is left alone. He can't do the New Zealand accent.
Yeah.
He can't do any
Maybe
of it.
Maybe he drops a good day, and they're like, wait a minute, what the fuck did
you
just say?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's an American, like, can't tell the difference tell between the difference. Australian and New Zealand. Yeah. So he's like, oh, yeah, I love Queensland.
And they're like, huh.
Okay.
Right. Did you say Queensland or Queenstown? Yeah. Yeah, you got it. Yeah. Queens.
Yes. Yes. You got. He can't do
and
it.
They, no. Yeah.
So I love having a population of 26 million. They're like, did you say 26 or did you say 4?
Yeah, yeah. I'm imagining down the line when we finally have a thriving metropolis in this fine country.
This is his, like, catching the sweat in Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
Like, he's got to get out of it.
Playing against Brett and Jermaine, just deadpanning him.
Standing there quizzing him and everything. They're like, what do you think of Flight of the Conchords? In world, they're not the Flight of the Conchords.
No, of course not.
But they still exists.
He's like, it's a great way to get between Paris and New York.
But
for a film that is meant to be funded by and advertised in the United Arab Emirates, there's all of a sudden so much New Zealand stuff in this film.
I wonder why that's...
We've spent like an hour there. We're now just like cameos from everyone.
We just spent 45 minutes in the biodome.
It was like a stable, calm, delightful opening focused on the UAE. This is all the bad stuff.
This has been 13 minutes. This is just by...
All right.
But I guess he gets rumbled at some point, right?
Yeah.
He says something that a New Zealander would never say. I don't know what it is.
It would be like, how do you, we're known for always saying, what do you think of, you know, how do you like it or whatever. So it's something like.
Right. He goes, what do you reckon?
That's not how we ask.
Yeah. We do it slightly differently.
And so we're going to hold you.
Inglourious Bastards.
Yeah.
Exactly. The three fingers up in the wrong way.
And so something's off, and so they put him in a holding cell.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And perhaps, because let's remember the New Zealand cricket team, the actual cricket team, have been held hostage at the start of this film.
So they're also
in the holding cell, and maybe the sort of, like, the punishment for being found is, like, he has to pad up, or not even pad up, but he has to, you know, like, against their will, the New Zealand fast bowlers have to bowl at this guy, and he's like...
Fuck, he's in the nets!
Yeah, he's in the nets.
Wow, okay.
That's a very Guantanamo. I like
that. It's real torture chamber stuff, but you are still getting a glass of two paddocks every hour.
But it's actually, it's making his hand eye worse, you know, he's copping bouncers.
he's torn, because he loves cricket, you know, he has been following cricket this whole time. Yeah. He's like... Oh, this is so bittersweet. Yeah.
He's up front and, you know, close with his heroes.
Yeah.
It's like Trent Bolt up in a huge, you know, it's incredible the way you skittled England and that. You know,
he's really specifically a fan of the New Zealand.
Still, like, poor script where he doesn't understand. Like, they haven't written in good cricket terms. So they throw one into his chest and he's like, oh, LBW. It's all wrong.
So, meanwhile, Sam Neill and Billy, they're elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Like, I suppose, are they trying to get to real New Zealand? Like, we need an interruption. We need to know what they're doing, where they're at.
I think they're trying to film this new tourism ad that they're going to air to discredit.
And they're filming that while he's in this torture chamber underground. They're filming that above ground in the new New Zealand.
Yeah.
Right. So there's not actually, you know, you could even do a camera trick where it's like as the torture's taking place, the camera moves up through the wine cellar, through the secret door, and onto above ground New Zealand, where you see Billy, like, against his will, being like, New Zealand is in incredible place.
We have like Wes Anderson style, like, cross section. Panning up.
And we even go through like the little the sort of claymation or puppet, like Fantastic Mr. Fox, you know, just I don't know why, sit and you're like, what's going on? You know, and it keeps going. He's working on the same studio who was building the set in the middle of like this actual set.
I love we've got like, Scorsese style one shots, we've got the Wes Anderson cross cut. This is
a love letter to cinema as much as anything.
This is where a lot of the budget goes to, is when we say it's this sort of director style, we've actually paid to get them in to just do that one shot.
And you get like that cross-section thing, but that we've done it in a really horrifying way where you go cross-section through a couple of people's bodies. Skeletons.
I've never seen
muscle.
That before. That would be cool.
They've just put it at just the wrong point.
And
you go into one of the bottles and it just looks delicious in this
Swimming around the bottle for a few minutes.
The tannins have been anthropomorphized and they're all like skipping around inside us.
Yeah, we're so delicious.
Up there, Sam Neill's got the kid under duress, got Billy under duress filming this new ad, making be like...
And he's getting really frustrated. He's getting angrier and angrier because he can't deliver these lines well because he doesn't believe in what he's selling because he doesn't actually think New Zealand's all of that.
Exactly. So Sam Neill's kind of getting a bit threatening, getting up there. He's like, if you ever want to see a cricket ball again, you better say this right, kid. You ever seen Jurassic Park? I'm the dinosaur from that.
He's not Sam.
No, he's like, I'm as threatening as a T-Rex, but they've just written this in. And Sam Neill didn't want to say it.
He hates that he has to reference it. He's like, I'm more than that. I've built a whole career.
I'm not playing Dr. Alan Grant in this.
He's really mad about it. And they bring another thing of his wine on set. And they're like, here you go. You can do it. He's like, fuck no.
Oh, and do you know what? So Billy's not delivering the lines. And Sam Neill's like, do it. We're going to do it again. He's getting more and more drunk, and he's becoming quite irate and rude on the two paddocks. And he's like, we're going to do it again. And he throws him. He's got the first or last shot of the tourism campaign is like Billy catching a cricket ball.
Oh, yes.
And he throws it to him, and it hits Billy on the chest and drops. And the sound of the cricket ball hitting the ground like echoes through down to the tour chamber.
Yes.
And Smith hears it, and he knows this. Billy drops uniquely. You know, he knows the sound
no
of a
Billy. Like
he knows the sound
he's been
of a Billy drop.
To teach him to catch, so he's heard that drop a million times.
Yeah. And so it's like, fuck.
Billy's here.
And maybe he's still facing shit in the nets, whatever, and they send one down to him, and he just smacks a ball like straight up. You know, it's a scoop shot, and it goes straight up. And it like creates a hole through the whatever the roof is made out of.
Yes.
And that's his opening. That's his way out. And he's now got a rough approximate location. Using his army ops, he's got a rough idea of where Billy is. He's got a reasonable means of getting through. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you know, all this cross-section stuff, we could have a bit of fun in there. Or he could just like burrow through the top of,
I
you
think
know.
He dives into the
he's
hole.
He's like, because, you know, you
if
you
just jumps
well, because it's like, you know, you lose the ball in cricket, you've got to go and find it. And so
true.
He smashed the ball through the roof, and everyone's like, you've got to go and get that. And he's like, ah, oh, fuck.
I like that. And you cut back to Richie Beno, like, in the thing, and he's like, that's a fantastic shot.
They're still comment, like, they're along for the ride commentating the torture.
Yeah,
there's a little camera somewhere.
Beno's just commentating the rest of the movie.
You'd have to imagine that's a war crime,
and
but
that's
the umpire
because,
hasn't
you know,
called it.
He's commentating the way that Kerry Bradshaw sort of confusingly commentates in you know, the exterior world of Sex and the City. Like, this is a narrative device that's worked for
us.
We can do
the
this.
Article
he's commentating it in real time as though, you know, he survives the whole thing and has overlooked the whole world.
The cricket ball goes up through, you see, and Sam Neill peers down the hole.
Great.
And he's like, what?
Or Billy.
And either... maybe the barrels of wine have been shaken by this and start emptying, filling up that chamber.
That makes sense. So
that
the ball could have gone straight through.
He can swim up this wine, but he's having to knock out the New Zealand cricket team. They can't help but drink the wine.
It's so delicious.
He's like, I want to save Billy, so we'll drink the wine later, absolutely.
In celebration,
it's the best thing I've ever tasted in my life. But for now, I need this to give me the buoyancy to reach up
but
to
does
the
that
top
mean
of the map.
All of the cricket players drown?
Yes. It's very important all of the cricket players drown.
Long shots focusing on their faces, turning
blue
out of the wine. Like Sonic when he runs out of air.
There's a deleted scene of the state funeral where we mourn the entire cricket team. It's like, well, they died doing what they loved.
And then have to name check all of like, their endorsements.
Two Paddocks sponsors the state funeral. Very tasteless stuff.
The like priest or whatever who's giving the sermon after the death is like, there's been a weird number of all right, another wine death, I guess.
Okay.
And he's able to float to the top.
He swims his way through the installation.
Maybe he gets to the top and he needs a hand to get, you know, he's like trying to climb onto the New Zealand. He needs a hand to get up to that, you know, to just finally be on level footing.
Mm-hmm.
And Rose is there.
Yep.
Yeah.
And like is there to, you know, reach. And he's like, bro, or whatever her name is. It's not Rose.
Agent.
Agent.
Agent Matafeo.
Why are we worrying about? We haven't named any other character in the movie apart from Billy. We've just been
Billy.
Saying Sam Neill.
And he's like, Rose, I need a hand.
Rose.
Oh, wow.
Sit in right
maybe
there.
Maybe everyone's just playing themselves curb style.
Cool. And she like reaches a hand out and he goes to reach for it. And it's like he's running out of strength because, you know, to get this far. And then she does a classic pull the hand away and it's like, I can't help you. And this is the betrayal. You know, this is the double agency.
Yes.
Thing, which is like, I'm too loyal to my country folk. I'm too loyal to Sam.
Yeah.
And I'm too loyal to this. And holds up a bottle of Special Reserve. Two Paddocks Prosecco. And she pops the cork. And maybe she pops the cork, but she pops into her own forehead and knocks herself out.
Good. Pretty good.
And
he looks around himself he's think I've had enough wine for one day. Right?
Neil's furious on this bit because he's like someone having a negative effect with the wine.
And Smith Jarrett has seen her pop the cork into her own forehead and he gets an idea. The wine is flooding the map now, and they're floating on two different like planks.
Yeah,
and Sam Neill has Billy.
How has the wine made the island?
Much wine.
It must be heaps.
The cellar. I think we understood it when we were talking about the cellar on the way down to the torch. The cellar's great.
Indiana Jones.
It spreads as far as like underneath the entire map of the world on this sort of memo. It's huge.
The Ark of the Covenant is hidden in there,
sure.
It's less cool than the wine, and it's flooding. coming up, Sam Neill and Billy are on a plank.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And he's got him like sort of in a headlock and he's like, I'm going to take this kid and I'm going to make New Zealand the greatest tourism destination in the world. And Smith Jared picks up a wine bottle and he says, you a an idiot. Some that.
Yep.
United Arab.
You are ended, right? It's UAE. Yeah. Right?
That's better.
Yeah. And the letters kind of come up on the screen.
Of course.
Yeah. And he's got the wine. He flucks the cork out.
Yep.
But and it's like a slow motion thing of the cork flying towards Sam Neill's head, who at the last minute dodges his head out to the side.
What?
Billy reaches his hand up.
Yes.
And catches the cork.
Whoa.
His first catch
he's ever done.
Yeah. And then punches out Sam Neill with the other hand.
Yeah.
The catch is just a cool thing he did. You did it!
And as it's happening, other people, off, like Richie Beno's like going from before.
Wait. He catches the cork, but that gives Smith time to pull out his giant gun and he just blows Sam Neill's head off, right?
Again, we've so far for like a war movie that's like big budget Hollywood, we've got a big star in it.
Very little action in this.
Like there's been basically no action.
There was the bar massacre.
We got the big there's the torture sequence and the big wine sequence is big action.
We haven't shot a gun yet.
It is mostly cricket and wine based action.
But
none of which are on the poster.
Yeah.
Well, I just don't think you're going to get that many people into a cinema with cricket and wine. You
know? True.
It's too niche.
On the other hand, you don't really want to make a movie advertising the UAE with a lot of gunfights.
No, that's right.
The cork catch seems like a climax.
Yeah.
It's nothing.
Yeah.
He gets shot in the forehead. Sam Neill dies. He's bleeding wine out of his body.
So graphic again.
Yeah.
Yeah. there's like 8 minutes of Smith Jared like paddling his raft over to the kid. That's all in real time for some reason.
Sure.
Yep.
Yeah, we don't cut it quickly.
He's not a good swimmer.
They reunite and he's like, oh, Billy, are you okay? He's like, they made me say some horrible, untrue things about the disgusting tourist destination that is New Zealand.
And I get the feeling that maybe in the credit sequence, it's like we get to see the tourism ad that they were trying to, you know, we get this.
I don't mind that at all.
Some outtakes.
We've cleaned up the wine.
The wine spill. It's
go a bit in the future. There's another 83-minute shot of walking through the beautiful tourism destinations, and we're back at the cricket field.
Yeah, but even before that, so he says to Billy, hey, "Billy, we did. Oh, we're back. We did it. What do you want to do?" It's like, I want to go skiing in the biodome. And then we actually see them skiing in the biodome. And then, in the future, say it's like, how old was Billy here? 9. So it's 10 years later. He's 19. Mm-hmm. And he's like, it's just a close up of his face. And it's like, you can do it. He's like, the last time I played cricket here, something terrible happened. He's like, it's different now. You're the captain of the UAE. And it comes out and he's in the uniform and he's learned to catch and he's learned to bowl. And it's like a cricket game is returning to the stadium. And
so good.
And this film is like a timeshare meeting where at the door of the cinema, there's like people with clipboards waiting to like sign you up on a flight over. It's impossible to leave without buying at least a flight or a night's accom.
I love it. And because we've jumped ahead in time, we can have the Jacinda Ardern post-credit sequence.
The threat will return.
It's like the tourism campaign with Billy is playing, and it seems like a blooper reel, but then at the end it like cuts out with one of the static, like, and then she's just Jacinda Ardern's on doing like a public service announcement.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. I'm going to destroy the United Arab Emirates.
Yeah, yeah. First we beat COVID-19, next we're going to beat the world.
I'm not welcome back in Russia. Let's go for two countries.
Okay.
Beautiful.
I don't mind that at all.
That's our film. That's the heart of the desert.
That's a hell of a movie.
There's a lot in there.
Yeah,
there really is.
Pretty true to the impression you got of it from Sex and the City 2?
I think certainly probably more New Zealand heavy than I anticipated.
Yeah.
But with respect to like, you know, leaps of logic and internal machinery and like a general disregard for, you know, what the actual intent of the movie is.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
we were money.
I'm glad.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. We fit the brief.
I mean, I had a lot of fun. I loved it. I would love to see that movie.
I would love to see
it's
it.
It's often the feeling where you're like, maybe movies should be bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I didn't say that. I think it sounds good.
Yeah. It sounds insane, but very entertaining. Yeah.
You got to promise us if you ever run into Sam Neill down the street, you got to let him know about this episode.
Yeah. I'll put him onto it. And Rose, too. And the Concords.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. And the Ghost of Richie Beno. Everyone gets a, you know.
Someday we'll write the script for this and we'll do it live on stage and we'll get all of those people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's the most realistic one we've done in terms of being able to achieve that.
Yeah.
Well, Guy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
People can check out The Worst Idea of All Time.
They can.
Your podcast.
If they so choose.
And stay tuned for the trailer for Heart of the Desert.
When an ex-soldier living in the beautiful and inviting paradise of Abu Dhabi...
I love living here. There's such fantastic cuisine, nightlife, and more.
...is faced with the world's most dangerous fast ball.
That ball's actually a grenade. I'm sure of it.
Honey, you don't understand cricket.
He only has one choice, to fight back. Unlike the wide variety of choices that you have when choosing which family-friendly holiday activity to enjoy in spectacular Abu Dhabi.
I'm going to find this child, fight these New Zealand-based international criminals, and enjoy unbelievable discount savings in one of Abu Dhabi's incredible shopping destinations.
To save the day, he'll have to take down people from a country you wouldn't think could be taken down another peg because it's already so low down and gross and disgusting. New Zealand. Other than its one saving grace, Two Paddocks Wine.
Two Paddocks Wine is delicious, delicate, and reasonably priced. But for whatever reason, I'm evil in this one.
Get the girls together.
Come on, Carrie, Charlotte, Miranda, and me, Samantha. Let's go and see Heart of the Desert.
And see Heart of the Desert today. Book your tickets now for Heart of the Desert. Not coming to theaters soon.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.